We will talk about a congressional hearing held yesterday to hear testimony about the attack on the consulate in Libya last month that resulted in the death of the U.S. ambassador to Libya. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, October 11th. Was this attack mishandled by the Obama administration? Did the State Department ignore requests for more security? Did the State Department try to mislead the public about the nature of the attack? Or do you think the Republican House Committee is trying to politicize this in the middle of a presidential campaign? Would more security have helped? And what about the reports that Republicans had voted to cut funds for additional embassy security? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk at WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is James Carafano, Deputy Director of the Institute for International Studies and Director of Foreign Policy Studies with the Heritage Foundation. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
It's good to be with you. Do we have any time left for the interview?
I'm sorry, I gave you a long intro there. What's your reaction to the State Department a day before these hearings saying that this indeed was a terrorist attack? It didn't evolve out of protests over that video.
Well, I mean, I think that's consistent with all the information that that we have on it. I think there's the number one concern that a lot of us have is that, you know, in a post 9/11 world where we spent really kind of 5 years putting in place reforms because you know we recognized that we couldn't childproof America, that we couldn't safeguard everything every time, but that we needed to do a better job of connecting dots and do a better job of getting early warning intelligence and sharing that effectively with the community. And in the event that something did happen, that we more effectively shared what we knew. When the State Department basically came out and did it, was, you know, the government failed at that. And then so the question I think we all have now is well, why is that?
Yeah, talk about what evidence they ignored or that told us there was going to be this attack.
Well, obviously the security situation in Libya before the Iraq was pretty precarious. I think that people that may have been following that very, very closely knew that. I think people widely didn't know that. I think that's background information that should have been shared immediately. It's information that we already had in hand. And so, I mean, we knew that on day one. We knew that 5 minutes after the attack that the security situation in the country was difficult beforehand. So I think that I think that's something that legitimate people said, well, why wasn't that shared? Why wasn't that information distributed immediately? I think that's the start of where the concerns lie.
Yeah. What's your take on this hearing? Was this necessary to do right now?
Well, I mean, certainly there was going to be a hearing. I mean, I think there was no question about that. It came in the middle of political season. That's just happened to be when it happened. Are people trying to hype it for political purposes? I mean, let's be honest. Well, of course they are. I mean, that's what they did. I mean, let's reflect back at Governor Romney came out and made a statement about the statement that the State Department put out before the Cairo violence. The other side politicized that. I mean, it's just that's the nature of politics. So I think that just has to be expected. But you know, all the politics aside, I mean, there are legitimate issues there. There is some conflating in that. I think, for example, going after the administration and the president in particular say, well, you failed, and looking at the pre-security situation. I mean, I do think we have to be cautious there. There is this. There's a saying that hindsight is 20/20, and there's an even more important saying, which is it's very easy to connect the dots when you know which dots to connect. And so when you look at an event backwards, we did this at 9/11, we did this at Katrina, we did this everything. It's very easy to say, oh, we should have done this, we should have done that, because with hindsight, you know the consequences of that. So when you're looking at it from the perspective of good public policy, in a sense fixing the problem, what you have to do is not say, knowing everything that came out, you know, let me criticize the guy for what I should have done differently. That's popularly called Monday morning quarterbacking. But asking it in a dispassionate, rational way, looking at the information that was out there and available to decision makers at the time, what kinds of decisions were fair and logical and reasonable.
Yeah. Well, do you think that the State Department was intentionally trying to mislead the public by at first saying that this attack evolved out of those protests over the anti-Islamic video?
Well, I think the answer to that is we simply don't know. Look, I was in the military for 25 years. There's a very famous saying in the military that was written by a 19th century Prussian military philosopher called the fog of war, which is, you know, things are never clear and obvious. There was a famous general during World War II named Matt Nettie, who was a great combat commander, who said, things are never half as good as half as bad as the first reports in the command post. So, yes, in the immediate aftermath, in the first moments and hours, there's always confusion and misunderstanding. And I think that we have to take account for that, and we have to recognize that. So I think for anybody to say, I mean, we have lots of information, lots of it's conflicting, but to say whether somebody was maliciously misled or whether they were incompetent or whether the system just failed and it's a combination of things that weren't intentional, I think that judgment can only come from really going back and kind of going through the record.
Yeah. So what did we learn from this hearing that we didn't know before?
Well, I think there were things that we had not heard. I think we learned in greater detail about the pre-security situation. And that, I think, there's just a lot of unanswered questions and a lot of unpacking we have to do. I mean, one thing you have to recognize is that the ambassador is the head of the country team. I mean, he's in charge of that. And so, in a sense, many of the decisions that get made about how security is distributed and everything, he's responsible for that. He's also the victim. So, I mean, the one guy who, in a sense, is really kind of on the hot seat is dead. And, you know, we're not going to get his side of the story except through the records that we have. So we have to unpack all of that. So that's complicated enough. And then, as we learn in this thing, is the ambassador is not the warrior king. He doesn't get all the resources he wants. The State Department has to make a judgment about what resources are they going to give one place as opposed to another. Because you have to remember, they're managing the security of every embassy all over the planet. And so unpacking to say, well, is that a reasonable decision in light of everything else they were doing? I mean, I think it takes time to kind of work through all that.
Give us your take on Democrats who are saying Republicans are being hypocritical over this security situation, saying that Republicans voted against increasing security at embassies in budgets.
Yeah, I just think that as we've heard people trying to politicize it on to make the administration look bad or duplicitous or something. I mean, that I think is just the mirror image of that comment. I mean, it's a very, very unhelpful comment and very misleading comment. First of all, you have to remember we don't have a budget. We have a continuing resolution. So regardless of what people in the House voted for, that in the end of the day didn't impact the amount of money that got spent. And the amount of money that got spent was a compromise between a democratically controlled Senate and a republically controlled House. So those comments don't really mean very much. And again, the Congress is authorizing money and giving it to the State Department. The State Department's making a lot of the day-to-day decisions on how that money gets allocated and distributed. So I think that's it's kind of a drive-by cheap shot that really doesn't inform very much. And the reality is we put a lot more money into security in the State Department post 9/11, and there's some artificiality to that because the situation in Iraq, we poured an enormous amount of money into security there. So there's this incredible kind of giant bubble that kind of adds on top of everything that really made the spending level go high. And so as we began to draw down in Iraq, that kind of bubble kind of went away. So it kind of artificially creates this notion that we're, taking money away from security for the State Department. But in a sense, Iraq kind of overinflated that bit. But the reality is we have put more money into that. The reality is I think if you go back and look at the testimony that the administration provided when they do the hearings for the appropriations for money for this year, I mean, it's not like the administration was hyping that Libya was a problem and they had to have a lot more money for Libya. So I think that's just, I mean, that's the flip side of a very unhelpful statement.
We are talking with James Carafano, Deputy Director of the Institute for International Studies and Director of Foreign Policy Studies at the Heritage Foundation. We're talking about the congressional hearing yesterday on the consulate attack in Benghazi, Libya last month. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions. Are you concerned that the State Department ignored requests for increased security prior to this attack? Are you concerned that the State Department tried to mislead the public over this attack? What thoughts and questions do you have on this issue? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Quick check of our weather. Cloudy with a slight chance of showers in northern Wisconsin this morning, then turning sunny this afternoon statewide. Highs today, mid-40s in the north to the low 60s in the south. A reminder that we are in our fall membership drive, and we are looking for your pledges of support as we talk about the issues of the day. WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is the number to call if you'd like to make a pledge. We are talking about one of the issues of the day during this half hour. Coming up in our next segment, we'll talk about robocalls and whether or not we can stop political robocalls. That's coming up after the news after 7:30. We are talking about this House committee hearing yesterday on how the State Department handled the September 11th attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi. And our guest is James Carafano, Deputy Director of the Institute for International Studies and Director of Foreign Policy Studies with the Heritage Foundation. And I'm wondering, Mr. Carafano, where do we go from here? What else do we need to know?
Well, I think there'll be a lot. I wish we could kind of cleave the issue in two. I think there's the front end, which is how do we handle the security? What kind of decisions did we make? How do we handle early warning? How do we handle intelligence? Which I think are systemic, important issues that we're going to resolve, and who's ever president is going to have to deal with these things. You know, we have Americans all over the world. They're out there looking after us, protecting us, protecting our interests. They're going to be in harm's way. They're going to be targets by the fact that they're out there looking after our interests. If there's systemic problems there or faulty decision-making or leadership, we need to figure that out. You can only do that in a thoughtful way. I mean, that is really something we ought to really try not to politicize. We shouldn't rush to judgment. Because if you look, you know, we in many ways rushed to doing intelligence reform because we had to do intelligence reform. In many ways, this may be an outcome of the fact that we didn't get intelligence reform right. I don't know. But we really should be thoughtful. And regardless of what short-term political gain people think they could make off of this, it's not worth it. So I really think we ought to put that debate aside and realize that it's going to take us weeks and months to get to the answers and maybe months more to figure out the right solutions. And we really ought to live the maxim that politics end at the water edge where it comes to that. I really, really do. On the other hand, you know, when you look at how the government reported what happened after the fact and how they reported it, I think there are very legitimate questions there that are essentially political questions about what did people know and when did they know it and what did they tell us and how did they try to shape their talk to Americans. And I think that's fair game.
Derek in Round Lake is with us now. Hi, Derek.
Hi, Joy. Yes, thanks for having me on. As a writer, actually, I recently wrote a piece for Foreign Policy and Focus magazine and out of Washington, and I think there's really lack of understanding by U.S. public about the real role of the U.S. State Department. First of all, there's been a lot of layoffs and resignations back during the George W. Bush administration. A lot of career personnel, and a lot of new people came in. A lot of them came from the corporate world. And nowadays, there's a very strong emphasis on basically forwarding business / corporate agenda than just simply looking at the security issues. And the best example of it would be Secretary Clinton going from one country to another and put it diplomatically pushing a lot of countries to sign the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, which is in one of those free trade agreements.
Yeah, I'm not sure, Derek. So, what is the? How does this relate to the Benghazi attack?
Well, to put it very, very mildly, there's different set of priority sets, you know, as far as the, for example, quote-unquote, security and defense interests are concerned. And I think there's a really fundamental lack of understanding what is State Department supposed to be doing versus, quote-unquote, foreign policy.
And so it sounds like Derek thinks the State Department's priorities have changed and its focus is not so much security but this other thing. Mr. Carafano?
Well, it is true. Every president comes in and they have different priorities, some of them on focusing on economic relations, some of them are focusing on security issues. And it's true that the State Department has to reallocate and adjust its priority and its resources in part to meet the president's agenda. Now, and I think that's actually probably true for every federal agency. Now, how it actually impacts on the operational activities of the department and the day-to-day things they have to do, because we always see these tensions. You look at the border, for example, where you have to facilitate trade and you also have to provide security at the border, and then the president comes in and he says, well, I want to do this, I want to do that. And you do sometimes have to move resources around, and sometimes that has kind of operational impact on the day-to-day things you're responsible for doing. Whether that had any influence here, and again, I think you have to remember every embassy is different. They have different security issues, different political issues, different staffing. And so it's very hard to kind of do a one over the world and say, well, because the president was out trying to negotiate a trade agreement, there was bad security in Benghazi. That's, you know, kind of a stretch. But this is why I say it's really going to take weeks and months to really unpack what the State Department was doing to really understand the linkages of cause and effect that may have contributed to this. You know, at the end of the day, it just may be that the ambassador made a bad decision, or they may have gotten caught in a situation which, you know, a reasonable person, even if they did appropriate due diligence, just because sometimes the other guy, the other side gets lucky, or the other side, you know, takes you out. So, like I said, I think on the front end of this, there really should be a call for prudence and fact-gathering rather than conclusion-getting.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
James Carafano is with the Heritage Foundation. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining me now is Rob Ferret. He is here to help me ask you to go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to make a gift in support of the programs you count on.
Our goal last hour was 25 pledges. How about this? We got 51 pledges
Woo-hoo.
From listeners. Thank you so much for those pledges. Now we've got another goal this hour. We are looking for 40 pledges, off to a good start, 4 already. Help us meet this goal by making a contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and the programs that you enjoy will be here each and every day on Wisconsin Public Radio.
You know, pledge any amount today, and you will be entered into a drawing for a very special gift, an iPad. Find out the details and make your pledge at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552.
You care about state, regional, and world events at WPR, and on the Joy Cardine Show, you get all that information, just like we're talking about right now. And lots of commentary, different perspectives on the news of the day.
You get news and information. You get programs that clear your mind, programs that entertain you. Support all of the programs you value at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Think about how often you tune into Wisconsin Public Radio. Maybe it's every day on your way to work or over the lunch hour, and then some more on the weekends.
It's an important part of your life. Your day would probably be very different, worse probably, if you couldn't catch your favorite programs. Make a contribution to keep the station you rely on going strong at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's easy to give to Wisconsin Public Radio. You can just make a gift of a dollar or two a week and a few minutes of your time.
And a dollar or two a week will add up to about $50 or $100 a year. And all year long, you'll enjoy this program and all of the other Wisconsin Public Radio programs that you count on. Make your contribution of any amount right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you've been listening to WPR for a while and never pledged, maybe you haven't given because you don't know that we're listener supported. Well, we are.
Mm-hmm.
Almost 40% of our budget comes from listeners. Or maybe you just wanted to listen for a while. See if you liked what you heard.
Well, you're still listening right now, all these months, or maybe even years later. You must like some of what you hear. How about a donation right now? After you've given, you'll feel great every time you tune in. Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Here's a great reason to make that first pledge today. And today only, anyone who pledges, everyone who pledges, will be entered into a drawing for an iPad. So you've got a shot at winning that with your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's a wonderful added incentive. Not only are you helping to pay for the programs, but an opportunity to possibly win an iPad. We are looking for 35 more calls before 8 o'clock to reach our goal as we are winding down this fall membership drive. Still very important to reach these hourly goals so we are able to stay on track and raise the money we need to raise. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We count on listener support. You are the listener. We need your financial support to keep Wisconsin Public Radio going strong each and every day. You listen, now please contribute. WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and get entered into that drawing for the iPad with a pledge of any amount.
Just another minute before we check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Some Public Radio coming up in our next hour. We're going to be talking about political robocalls and whether or not there's anything we can do to stop them. Have you been receiving political robocalls like I have? Well, now we want a different call from you at 888-202-2552. You can also pledge online at WPR.org.
Pledging just takes a minute or a couple minutes of your time. It's easy, and you get to decide the amount. You get to decide how much you can afford and how much Wisconsin Public Radio is worth to you. Whatever the amount, take that couple of minutes right now, please. Go to WPR.org or pick up the phone and dial 888-202-2552. Make that pledge.
Thanks to Mary from Phillips, who says, I just want to make sure that this wonderful resource is sustainable and is around for my grandchildren to listen to when they're old enough to form their own ideas and opinions about life. Aww. That's very nice, Mary. An investment in future generations with her pledge of support to Wisconsin Public Radio. You can make one too at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Joy Cardine with Rob Ferret. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.